I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and it's Politics Day on The Takeaway, y'all.
It was the question baffling the nation's capital last week.
Negotiations around President Biden's social infrastructure and environmental package have dominated D.C. this week. On Thursday, ahead of his trip to Europe, Biden announced the framework for the package, which now comes in with a top line of about $1.75 trillion. So what's in and what's out? Well, here's how the president put it.
No one got everything they wanted, including me. But that's what compromise is. That's consensus. And that's what I ran on.
The new proposal does not include a federal paid family and medical leave program or efforts to lower prescription drug pricing. Also, it does not include free community college for all. And while it expands Medicare coverage to include hearing care, it does not include vision or dental services. But what makes this arduous process of legislative wrangling so unusual is that it's not a matter of partisan gridlock. Democrats are negotiating with themselves, and the ones holding the most sway are the center-right holdouts in the party. And yes, you've heard their names before. Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. Now, this has frustrated many of their Democratic colleagues, some of whom have publicly questioned the senators' motives for months. Here's Representative Katie Porter at the end of September on MSNBC.
Until Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin are able to come up with what they want to do for their constituents, to do for the American people, until Senator Sinema stops being cute and starts doing her job and leading for the people of Arizona, we're simply not going to be able to move the president's agenda forward.
Representative Ilhan Omar on Democracy Now! Just last week.
All Democrats are essentially on board, except for these two who are essentially doing the bidding of Big Pharma, Big Oil, and Wall Street.
And Representative Pramila Jayapal, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, on MSNBC on Wednesday.
There are also programs that are going off the table. And yet we have two senators, one who can say, I don't want paid leave, a guy. Who can say, I don't want paid leave. Another who can say, I don't want to roll back the Trump tax cuts.
Senator Manchin's motivations, well, they seem to be clear. Look, he represents West Virginia, a state where Donald Trump won by 39 percentage points in 2020. And it's also a state dominated by the coal industry. Sinema, on the other hand, is a first-term Democratic senator from Arizona. And President Biden carried her state. Sinema was known for rarely holding town halls with constituents or taking questions from the press. She started her political career as a progressive Democrat in the Arizona House of Representatives, but now is seen as one of the more conservative Democrats in the U.S. Senate. During her brief time in office, she's gained a reputation for being particularly inscrutable.
It was the question baffling the nation's capital last week. What does Kyrsten Sinema want?
Last week, five members of Senator Kyrsten Sinema's Veterans Advisory Council publicly stepped down, calling her one of the principal obstacles to progress. We're joined now by one of those former members, Sylvia Gonzalez-Endersch, an Air Force veteran. Welcome to The Takeaway, Sylvia.
Hello, and thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Let's just start by understanding the work of the Veterans Advisory Council. Like, what kinds of things did you do, and what did you? Why did you want to join in the first place?
Well, I wanted to join because I wanted to be a voice for women's veterans issues, and you know, represent you know, the concerns that we had.
And what, just to help us to understand, so is this like you all are meeting regularly with her staff? Are you meeting with the senator? I just, you know, I know not everyone understands all the ins and outs of how sort of, you know, how a senator gains information.
Well, it's a voluntary council, but you do have to apply and be accepted to her council. We were supposed to be having regular meetings, but the pandemic did upset that a bit, and we had changed to Zoom. We, you know, tell her what we feel about what's going on in the veteran community. We talk about veterans legislation and what she's doing in those regards.
Got it. Now, before the decision to step down, I'm wondering if you had ever felt a sense of frustration in this work that you were doing.
Well, you know, veterans are citizens like everyone else. And so our issues really overlap the general population as well. Veterans are a very diverse organization of all different people. And, you know, we really feel that since we have put forward, you know, put our lives on the line, that we want to make sure that veterans have protections. You know, the incidents now of all the voter suppression laws are really going to affect veterans, especially disabled veterans, veterans with PTSD, mail-in ballots. You know, those are essential. And also PTSD veterans cannot stand in hot lines outside around crowds without having some consequences. So we're very concerned about that.
Oh, that's so helpful. I'm not sure that I've ever heard it framed in particularly that way. I think we, you know, we hear frequently about how some of these voter issues impact some kinds of communities, but I'm not sure I've ever heard it particularly framed around concerns for veterans. So can you tell us what was your motivation for stepping down? And given that it was a handful of you all, did you have a conversation about it first, or were these five individual decisions?
No, it was a collaboration between all of us. It was just a feeling of frustration that we had. And then I reached out to some of the others and they mirrored the same concerns. So we really didn't know how we could reach her personally as far as on the council. So, you know, this was what we felt, you know, we were just making a statement that we were very concerned about these issues and that she wasn't listening to her constituents.
Do you feel like stepping down helped her to hear you? I'm wondering maybe what her response has been. I know you sent us a voicemail of the senator responding. It sounded like a very polite kind of response. I'm just wondering how you heard that.
I heard it as a simple acknowledgement, but not any addressing any of our concerns.
Obviously, U.S. senators have large staffs. And so when I hear you say that you were having trouble reaching her, even though you were a member of the advisory council, I'm wondering if that is part of how the senator's office is run. Like, is it just sort of multiple gatekeepers in order to have a conversation or express your views?
I really can't say exactly how it all works. We did have a liaison that was supposed to be, you know, our liaison, but it was usually a one-way conversation of her sending us information on what the senator wanted us to do, whether it was to show up at an event or to just give some feedback on whatever small thing that she wanted an answer on.
So you mentioned, you know, being asked to show up at events. Certainly the senator is known for rarely holding town halls. I think maybe especially for a first term senator, typically lots of town halls with constituents are kind of part of the profile for a first term office holder. I wonder if you have a sense, again, being on the advisory council and as you pointed out, being a constituent, right? Being a veteran means being a member of the general public. Do you have a sense of sort of either why that was or maybe how other members of the community of Arizona feel about that lack of access?
Well, I mean, that was another frustrating thing, seeing all the videos of people trying to talk to her and she's ignoring them. And it was very sad to see that she did not acknowledge or recognize the actual constituents that she's representing.
Talk to me a bit about what you see as the most important issues facing the state of Arizona right now. So, you know, let's walk away from the reconciliation bill for just a moment and just really talk about if you and maybe some of the other members of this advisory council were able to kind of make a top 10 list of these are the things that really matter to people living in Arizona. What might be on that list? And in what ways do you feel the senator either is or is not representing those interests?
Well, you know, the biggest thing is the voter suppression that is going on here in the state legislature, you know, that trying to make all kinds of changes to the voting laws. And, you know, voter restriction and voter suppression are essentially a huge detriment to democratic process and to the democratic representation of our citizens. You can't have a strong democracy without voting rights and without everybody having a vote that's recognized. And then the other thing is, you know, there's lots of concerns, you know, about the prescription drug prices that when she ran on negotiating those prices and bringing that down. I mean, we have citizens and veterans who have to decide whether they're going to pay their rent or pay their prescriptions. It's heartbreaking, and it's sad to think that we as her constituents cannot really reach her with the seriousness and gravity of these concerns.
Some people in who are sort of political observers, whether it's members of the media or others who are kind of watching everything happening with the reconciliation bill, have said, I think, as I said in the intro, that she feels inscrutable a bit, that it's not completely clear, given that Arizona was carried by President Biden and given that she's a first-term senator, sort of what her motivations are in this broader reconciliation process. I'm wondering again if you have, and these don't have to be, I understand, expert insights, but just your feeling. Is this, do you think, about lobbying? Do you think this is about seeking higher office at some point? Do you think that she feels that she's actively representing the interests of her constituents in some way that maybe we just don't quite understand from the outside?
Well, I think that the word that you used, inscrutable, is an excellent example of how we all feel. We don't know. We don't know what's going on. We have no idea what her priorities are. We, you know, observationally, we see her taking, you know, trips and, you know, big pharma donations, and it is very concerning. What we can see doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, and it doesn't go along with what we elected her to do. It's disconcerting, and she is inscrutable as far as that's concerned to me. I mean, we can only make our own personal assumptions, and some of those would not be very, you know, complimentary.
Sylvia Gonzalez-Andersch is a U.S. Air Force veteran and also a former member of Senator Kyrsten Sinema's Veterans Advisory Council. Thank you for joining us and for giving us your perspective on all of this.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate you bringing our voice to the forefront.